Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Fall in love with low prices, all in the Kroger app. Get juicy green, red, or black seedless grapes for $1.88 a pound with your card and a digital coupon. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here for the last of our position group reviews today, discussing the inside linebackers. And joining me to do that is Jordan Coe. Jordan, how you doing?
Good, Ken. Glad to be here.
Always great talking football with you, Jordan. So many things we could be doing other than that this week, reviewing a Super Bowl win, et cetera. But it is what it is. The Ravens, I don't know about you. I don't feel like they were anything like a sure thing to beat the Eagles. Eagles certainly looked exactly like what could give the Ravens a lot of trouble.
I mean, the Eagles are what usually they have a formula that wins a lot of Super Bowls, which is be able to rush the passer with your front four and still have good cornerbacks and like heads up secondary type players to be able to take advantage of that pressure when it comes into play. And that's exactly how that game went. And it was over early because of it. But we've seen that happen before. We've seen, you know, the Giants shut down Tom Brady. I mean, these teams that can get after with four guys can really make an impact. And, you know, I know we're not talking about, outside linebacker, but I think you and I have talked a lot historically about how the Ravens feel like they go a little cheap on they get really good value for their buck at outside linebacker, but they don't have that difference maker right now that anywhere on the line that is anywhere near what kind of Jalen Carter was able to do. Even though he wasn't the one who did it in that game, his effect reverberates across that whole defensive line.
I would agree. And I you know, they want Travis Jones to be that guy. Clearly, and he's a notch below it maybe, but he's still very good. And he does drive the pass rush from the inside. Then they have Matabike, who wins a lot of one-on-ones. I think that the depth at outside linebacker could be a problem going forward. They got by with patchwork depth this last year, but let's talk inside linebacker here, because this is a position that's in a lot of flux after Roquan. Roquan is a constant. We know exactly where he's going to be plugged in, where he's going to play. But they're no longer a committed nickel team with Patrick Queen gone. They've now gone back to kind of a platooning scheme. High-level thoughts on how that worked out this last year.
I mean, I go back and forth about it. I think that a lot of the issues with the Ravens this year were communication or play style, in terms of whether those are reads by those linebackers having to be doing more or more complex or more than Simpson was ready to handle in kind of like game motion readiness. It took Queen a couple of years to get it and get it under his belt before he really started to get it as well. So I think there's that opportunity with Simpson for him to be able to do it. You know, in some ways, the things that made Patrick Queen really frustrating as a player when he was here was a lot more man coverage and a lot more teams taking advantage of him in particular and isolating him and attacking him. That didn't seem Trenton Simpson's problem seemed to be that he just didn't know where he was supposed to be sometimes. And when he wasn't where he was supposed to be, it was really bad. And that's a fixable problem. You know, we still saw splash plays from Simpson and what you got from him. But I don't know. It feels like some of his awareness issues are even farther behind where Patrick Queen's were. And that may speak to why he, you know, I don't know if you remember this. We did the inside linebacker draft coverage podcast the year that Trenton Simpson was drafted. And he was my top guy of all the guys. And we talked about him going in the second round and maybe early third. And he certainly went later than what both of us had thought he was going to. And maybe there's a reason for that.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about Simpson individually, certainly, but in terms of the coverage player we hoped he'd be, being a transplanted safety, and you'd hope that some of those skills would be portable, I certainly don't think he lived up to it. The problem is that no one else did really either. Chris Board might have been their best as the backup. Actually, I'll tell you, their best was Kyle Hamilton when he was playing dime, when they had the luxury to do that, but they ran out of safeties during the year, and they didn't have enough to continue playing dime. So that'll be a big... You know, they can change the dynamic of that weak side linebacker position by getting back in a position where they have enough safeties and enough safeties active on game day that they can move to dime without any fear of not having that available on the highest leverage plays that come about. And whether he's playing slot corner or whether he's playing dime, I think we agree Hamilton's pretty much the ace of trumps there if you had your choice of almost any NFL player.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the thing is that by the end of the year and by the second half of the year last year, Mike McDonald really trusted Patrick Queen to do what he was assigned to be doing. And it might not have been the highest level play all the time. He certainly had his fair share of splash plays, but there was trust between him and Roquan. There was trust between him and the other guys in the secondary. That was something that the Ravens never had through the balance of this year. And so say what you will about the year that Patrick Queen had, the player that he is, he's a flawed player. I think that the league recognized that when no one was willing to offer him.
Say a flawed player?
Yeah, flawed. Like, as in not as good as Roquan Smith. And look, inside linebacker is just a really hard position to play in today's NFL. You have to cover all kinds of different things. You have to be doing a lot of different things. You know, and so you have to have both the smarts and the athleticism of multiple types of athleticism to be able to be successful in there. And Patrick Queen wasn't perfect at all of those, but they trusted him to do the things they asked him to do. And I don't feel like the Ravens ever got to that point this year with their defense. And I think that makes it a little harder to defend overall, as just from an overall scheme standpoint, when you're constantly worried about having to adjust for a player, not just because maybe they're getting targeted, right? You know, and I think the Brandon Stevens is a good example of this, right? The Ravens kind of lived with Brandon Stevens being the guy that was attacked in the secondary, right? But they didn't really do a lot schematically to change that. I feel like they were constantly moving people and parts around this inside linebacker spot, and it was a big part of the struggles early in the year.
All right, let's talk about the path a little bit. But before we do that, I do want to talk about Queen for a second, because his departure, there are people who are still Patrick Queen apologists at this point. And the truth of the matter is that Patrick Queen at $13 million a year, they save basically $10 million on the position by not having him here, you know, giving the money to, well, you know, the much less money to combination of two guys or even three, if you want to call Hamilton partially there. But Queen had a terrible year for Pittsburgh. So he was asked to do more again, you know, to lead their defense, be the defensive play caller. So he couldn't come off the field, which has its own very serious problems with Patrick Queen. But in particular, the game he played against the Ravens in the week 17 game, I guess it was, where the Steelers lost any hope to come back and win the division, basically. That was about as bad as you can play an inside linebacker in a game. And in fact, his own people came out after the game and said he was sick. But was it the playoff game?
No, that was the playoff game. It was the
wild card game. Okay. Yeah. That's just as bad as you can play. I mean, he's just constantly, basically, it almost seemed like he was allowing himself to be pushed out of the play just to say, oh, no, look, I'm engaged. I can't go ahead and try and make that tackle. Belichick is looking at the film of him. There's some very funny clips of him saying, I don't know what Patrick Queen's trying to do here, kind of thing. I don't think there's any room for Patrick Queen apologists to really say that was the wrong move to let him go. In fact, the Steelers may let him go after 1 year, given the contract they've got. They probably will not, but they certainly should consider it, given what went on. But going back let's go through the seasonal path that the Ravens went through. So they started with Simpson as a full-time three-down player, effectively came off the field for a few plays, but basically as a full-time player for the first few weeks. Then they went back in about week three or four to Simpson being a two-down player and then bringing in a dime back. In this case, it was moving Hamilton over to dime. So as early as week three or four, there were the feelings that this isn't working out. Then they went to Simpson alternating series with Board. Now, that's very telling, of course, because alternating plays the way that kind of Board and Harrison split the duties, which was very skills-based and down skills-related down and distance, and who they wanted in a coverage package in the dime versus who they wanted on for early downs to help with run defense. That has some merit to it. But when you just alternate series, that's open competition for the position. That's Simpson's not doing it. And we're going to give, you know, Chris Board, a six-year veteran, a chance to take the position away from this guy that we drafted to take that spot. And then finally, Harrison Board just took over for Simpson, and Simpson was only a mop-up duty player. So it's very, very clear exactly, you know, how he ended the season with the Ravens. It didn't change in the playoffs. They continued on with Harrison and Board. And you know, neither of those guys were world beaters this season.
And, you know, I mentioned Brandon Stevens earlier. If you want to point to how a player can play poorly and still have a spot on the Ravens defense, he's a prime example of that. So it must have been really bad for Simpson. It must have been more than what they were seeing on the field, you know, and I think that especially when teams go back and look at tape and they're looking at where a guy was when he wasn't targeted, I think those are the plays that were ultimately the ones that got Simpson to like lose his job outright, and that he wasn't even, you know, and again, I don't watch the defensive film close enough to know this, but that he wasn't run fitting correctly, that he wasn't getting depth in his drops, or he wasn't dropping correctly, or he wasn't reading bunch formations, or whatever those kind of like pass offs and handoffs and those kind of things that needed to be happening, even on plays that he wasn't the primary target, that we aren't seeing really quite as much as fans. That tells me that on tape, if you went back and watched it, he's going to be out of position a lot, and that they're going to be guys chirping at him about being in the wrong place, even when he's not the main player in those moments. And mm-hmm. So, yeah, it just says a lot that they didn't even try and give him that rotational chance that they were doing with Harrison and Board.
Yeah. Harrison and Board, right? Yeah. I do agree. And I think you could extend that and say it might even be in something in terms of practice. And it not necessarily in terms of work ethic, but it might have been in terms of just learning capacity, that he wasn't moving around in terms of learning scheme, remembering things the way he needed to. But it's very frustrating because they obviously put up with a lot of that crap for Queen, in large part probably because of the first round draft pick pedigree and some of the athleticism he brought to the table. Simpson's probably not too far behind Queen as an athlete, honestly. He might be in a similar place or on a similar track in terms of how he had grown through the years, given this is his, if you want to call this his second year. I think Queen played any better than Simpson did in 24 in his second year, which I guess was 21, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I tend to agree with that, but again, I think that this is really that combination of things. And look, processing in the NFL is really hard. Processing, like I mentioned it earlier, processing at the inside linebacker position is twice as hard as any other probably any position on the field on the defense, right? You're either just trying to process what you're looking at from a pass perspective. If you're in the secondary, you're trying to process what's happening on the offensive line perspective. If you're on the against the offensive line up front, but if you're in the middle of all that, you've got to be able to do both of those. Yeah. And if you're constantly out of position,
you're at the nexus of option decision making for the defense. So you've got to read the options correctly. You've got to read the quarterback well. You got to do a lot of things well. It's true, and a lot of times you just got to be good enough. And in Simpson's case, sometimes maybe following Roquan or keying off him would have been enough.
I think the other thing to note here is that Harrison and Board were significantly younger when Queen was going through these iterations, but they were still on the roster. That if Trenton Simpson and Patrick Queen had flipped spots in time, I wonder whether or not we would have had the same outcome. That by having the veterans that have seen the scheme, have played some of the position already, have understood, and it's the same calls and it's the same construct, maybe not the exact same calls and things, but the same construct of a defense as it was before, that edge might have made a difference between why Trenton Simpson lost his job faster than Patrick Queen might have at that time, just from a roster crunch perspective.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, the team was, if you go back to 2019 and look at just how freaking desperate the team was to get an inside linebacker in there, and they started week one with Patrick Owosso out there. That's pretty bad. They decided it was his turn to win the Mike linebacker job and whatnot. They had to totally rebuild on the fly, and they did. They did the same thing, in my opinion, in this season. They said this is not good enough. They changed and they made it sort of work. I think you'd have to say by the end of the year, they were doing, I think by the end of the year, they had the best group of players out there that they had available to them. Maybe not for growth, but that was the best set of players that they had available to them at the time. So a lot of times I hear that, and particularly offensive line or maybe a cornerback this year. And I don't know if I really agree with that, kind of thing. Or maybe they could have given a shot to have Brandon Stevens playing safety or something. But I think honestly, at the inside, in terms of the solutions they had available, I don't think they had much better to try than what they ended up with. But I want to talk through a few of the themes of this defense as you went through the season. Week one, absolutely embarrassed by pick and rub routes out of bunch formation. That was really the big thing. One thing that you can really say about Patrick Mahomes, because he's still a great quarterback, obviously, despite the Super Bowl and despite the season he had, generally speaking. But when he finds the thing that you are weak at, he will exploit it and exploit it and exploit it until you stop. And he is a very precise thrower. So if you don't get a lot of pressure on him, then he's going to be able to do exactly what he wants. Obviously, the Eagles did get plenty of pressure for him, and there were a couple of read-based interceptions, which you don't normally see against Mahomes, come up. But in that first game, the Ravens didn't get that done. And that meant that there were a lot of over the middle throws that really exploited the linebackers.
And that's what Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes do best. And that's what they do best against the Baltimore Ravens. I mean, if you look at the history of what Patrick Mahomes, it's not just, I do think some of those transfers and some of that preparation wasn't where you would expect it to be when you have the entire offseason to prepare against a team that you played as much as they have played against Kansas City over the last few years. So I think that's probably some level of the frustration overall. But the Ravens have, this is going to be borderline sacrilegious to say, but even across over the middle of the field in terms of like passing defense during the premium era of this team and Ray Lewis in his prime, they were not an inside out type defense in terms of how they ran their pass approach. It was not like what Patrick Willis and Navarro Bowman were doing on the inside together in their 3-4 defense when they were in San Francisco. And so Ray Lewis covered a lot of ground, was asked to do a lot, and was not perfect all the time in those situations because of the 4-3 formation and because he was asked to do so much in some of those situations before they switched into the 3-4.
Okay, so that happened in 2002. That's a long time ago. Are you really current? You're really only talking about like 2000, 2001, 1999, Ray Lewis?
Yeah, the earlier years of Ray Lewis but even post that, I still don't think that the Ravens defense has always been built around defending the run first, right? Mm-hmm. That is the priority of their linebackers. The weak side linebacker on the inside has always been a run cleaner upper almost exclusively in terms of what they've asked him to do. And that's evolved and changed over time with the NFL, but it's just not been an area. I don't think it's been an area of strength from a pass defense perspective for the Ravens on the weak side of the inside linebacker position since, I mean, maybe since Bart Scott, right?
Well, but that's the name that's coming to mind was Bart Scott. But I mean, you'd have to give Adalis Thomas as an outside linebacker who played a lot of safety for the Ravens. I mean, in 2005, which is before Bart Scott's really major playing time came about. But, you know, Adalis Thomas was the key reason why they played 265 snaps with three defensive backs on the field.
Yeah,
I think I would state it slightly differently than from you. And I'll take this. You had something else to say. Do that first, and then I want to say how I'd state it a little differently.
Yeah, it's just I don't look back historically at the Ravens and say, oh, their pass defense on the inside linebacker position has been what has made this defense tick. There's never been a point where when I've looked back, I've said that specific group and specific way in the defense has been attacked has been the one that teams would never even think of doing. And there definitely have been defenses that have met that standard.
All right. So I'm not going to disagree with that directly, but I'll state slightly different. And maybe we come to an intersection of those two theories. I think the Ravens have been a great run defense, and they've been a great run defense because they've systematically, continuously rebuilt to have a star player at each of three levels in the nickel. Okay, when I say each of three levels, I'm talking about defensive interior, outside linebacker, and inside linebacker. Ray Lewis, obviously a big part of this from start to finish in terms of stopping the run. He still could help you a little bit against the pass, even towards the end of his career when he had lost all his speed, all ability to cover. He's still a good reader of the quarterback, got in the lane in passing lanes, could still do some things to help you. They try and rush the quarterback with him sometimes, that a little bit of value there too, but not a whole lot. If you look at the Ravens, though, their amazing thing is they always had Suggs pretty much for a large portion of this period, generational run defender. They had players like Jarrett Johnson on the outside who could give you that run defense. And they always had at least one and sometimes two guys who could jam the middle like nobody else could jam the middle, with Nada and Kelly Gregg together, and with Brandon Williams and Michael Pierce together, and other combinations through those years, such that they never gave up 4 yards a carry. But they did that. They built so strong there to stop the run because they wanted to play nickel for the vast bulk of snaps, nickel or dime. And I thought that while it was a somewhat of a concession in terms of how you built the franchise, they did a great job of having the nickel personnel to stop the pass very effectively. And in particular, you're looking at slot corners. Sometimes they had great players like a Lardarius Webb there, or even a Tavon Young, who I think was a very good player. But other times they had players they were getting by with, you know, Robert Bailey on the 2000 team, or Corey Ivey, who was a great player on the 2006 team. I mean, these are players of, you know, very average athleticism. So the point I'm making is that, yeah, they built their team more for the inside linebackers to contribute more against the run, but it was a big contribution to pass defense to have those guys in there because they were so stout. You could only play six set pieces and still have five, a great number of additional snaps.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't disagree with any of that either. I mean, I think that the Ravens, a bulk of the Ravens' great defense is played in an era where forcing teams to pass was not what it is today. And so it is just like the tipping of I see the equivalent. I see the same approach for the Ravens. And if you look, I mean, Mike Macdonald was the first that we ever really even pushed a little bit towards being okay with not defending the run elitely to trade that off against the pass. And they reverted back to that this year under Orr, I think, a bit, where they cared a bit more about stopping the run, and teams were throwing a lot against them because of that. And so I think that, you know, I don't know where that comes from. Obviously, I know where it comes from, or grew up in the defense that leaned in that other direction in particular. And that was Ravens football and in the way that he knew it. So, you know, they've just never prioritized defending the pass in the middle of the field quite as the same way as they have in other areas. And I think that you see that from a personnel and outcome perspective to a degree.
So this year, to blame the inside linebackers for the Ravens' inability to stop the pass for the first 10 weeks would be somewhat disingenuous, because the safety play was obviously isolated in terms of what was wrong. Brandon Stevens had problems the entire season. Some of which we actually blamed on the safeties, but then some, as the layers of the onion were peeled, namely Jackson and Williams, were peeled the hell out of there. We really saw that even Stevens was a bigger problem than we had been willing to accept early on in the season. And the inside linebackers, while they certainly weren't great, I thought Roquan was good and given a ton of responsibility in that regard. But they certainly had weakness 100% for sure in terms of what they got out of the other weak side linebacker spot.
Yeah, absolutely. This was such a fascinating defense overall, because in some ways they had some stars, like you mentioned earlier, at a lot of different levels and had a lot of talent on this defense. And, you know, the Ravens have historically been really good, like you mentioned, about kind of covering that up and using a combination of guys like Kyle Van Noy and like journeymen and guys that just do their jobs in those situations, plus the stars, to be enough to make a really good defense. And it was very interesting at how much of those not star players were not even giving you the baseline minimum of what you needed. I mean, yeah. I still can't. It's fascinating to me, the play of Marcus Williams and the drop off from there. It speaks a lot to, I think, how much Orr changed the defense from what Mike McDonald was doing. Because there's no way a player that for 2 years, at least when he played and was healthy, had a high impact on the defense from a pass defense perspective to not being able to contribute at all is just very peculiar to me. And in the sense of how that aligns to Trenton Simpson, is maybe they made it a lot more complex than what was happening with Mike McDonald. And I feel like I remember Mike McDonald, his play sheet was always, it looked like a 3x5. I know it wasn't a 3x5, but it always looked really small, right? Like you see all these guys with these big play sheets, lots of comments, lots of notes. And for McDonald, it was much shorter. And I don't know where that comes from or why or what the root of that is, but I think it seems like the Ravens decided to add a lot more complexity to defense this year. And I think that is what led to a lot of the struggles early on in terms of picking up some of those coverages and Trenton Simpson's inability to pick up the defense.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about which cylinder wasn't firing in those first 10 weeks in the most serious sense. And it's definitely at the safeties, which is part of the problem. If you look at things like targets on which are highly dependent on the source you get them from, if you take them from PFF, take them with a grain of salt, because they include a lot more targets for the inside linebackers than they do for the safeties on coverages between level 2 and 3 than another source like Pro Football Reference would. So if you look at Eddie Jackson the past 4 years, PFF's got him, this is before he came to Baltimore, for 100 targets, and it was like 10.0 yards per target, right on the money. And PFR had him for 144 targets over the same period. So 44% higher targets. Whatever weaknesses are ascribed to an inside linebacker, particularly on a throw between level 2 and level 3, it's not always that the inside linebacker isn't responsible for it. It's often a case that the safety can make the throw look dangerous to the quarterback, even when he's not the closer player. And you probably need to take those things with a grain of salt. So in particular, level 2, level 3, it's definitely a shared responsibility in terms of fear and coverage and, you know, the ability to play a soft bracket well and whatnot. Loose bracket, I should say. But anyway, I think it's really important that you know, if you look at information that's specifically on inside linebackers, you really consider how those targets were set up. Anyway, that's my soapbox on that matter. as a tackling year, honestly, pretty good year for the inside linebackers. Even Simpson was pretty good, but Roquan was very good. And I, a lot of the tackling, I think, came back. And I, you know, you got to, I say, there's some significant addition by subtraction in getting rid of Patrick Queen, even though Harrison didn't have a particularly good tackling year personally.
Yeah, I mean, Simpson, you know, it wasn't that he couldn't block shed. It wasn't that he, when he was in the right place, that he didn't contest passes. It wasn't that, you know, it was just that when he wasn't in the right place, he wasn't in the right place. Yeah. And so, you know, that gives you some hope for him. And what, you know, and the downside of that is just for the position that requires a lot of processing on the field in the moment, are the Ravens going to do something that simplifies what that's going to look like at inside linebacker or not? You know, it's not that he's missing tackles. It's not, you know, with Harrison, he just didn't like Harrison. I don't think his problem wasn't that he wasn't in the right spot. It was that he was consistently like not a fast switch player, easy to beat in kind of misdirection routes and kind of hard cuts, et cetera. And teams just really took advantage of that. And running backs took advantage of that too. That's not the problem you have with Simpson. It's a fascinating choice between the two when you have to pick.
Right. Well, they for whatever reason, they felt like they had to go the way they did. And I can't discredit them for it. I think that, you know, they obviously know what was wrong with Simpson. None of these guys produced much in the way of pass rush on the season. They didn't really rush the quarterback a whole lot. Roquan was actually only a little bit below last year in terms of his total number of rushes, but the way they stick him up in the A gap as often as they do, you'd think he'd rush a lot more, but he's a very commonly is a simulated guy and drops to cover. Rushed, I think it was 88 times. That might be during the regular season. Yeah, 88 in the regular season, down from 93 in 2003. That's not a big drop, but 5.5 per game is not a lot for how much they set him up in the A gap. And, you know, there's almost a tell in what's going on that if Roquan is in the A gap, he might not be coming, because a hallmark of this team was that their blitzes from off ball were extremely well disguised. They did a fair amount of simulated pressure, but their blitzes, particularly from off ball, were very well disguised. So it's almost like if they're showing you one thing, they probably mean something else, which you can't have that be true all the time. Sometimes you gotta come with exactly what you're showing in order to make that, you know, the bluff when you use it meaningful.
Well, this is the area where they missed Patrick Queen, and I was not a Patrick Queen apologist, but I don't necessarily agree with you that the Ravens would not have been much better on defense with Patrick Queen on this team this year. Now, at the price of what Pittsburgh paid him at this year, that was non-tenable, but at the right number, Patrick Queen would have been a significant, especially with his history on this defense, would have been a significant improvement playing next to Roquan Smith.
Okay, first of all, I'm in agreement. I'd rather have Patrick Queen at the vet minimum than Harrison or than Board.
So, I mean, I would have been okay with a number probably between 5 and 7 million against the cap.
5 and 7 million. Okay, against the cap. Now you're signing me up for Queen long term. I'm already rebelling against that number.
You could take that however you want. I mean, Pittsburgh AAV. Has done a great
job. Give me a 3-year AAV. What would you have paid for Patrick Queen?
I mean, somewhere between 5 and 7.
Okay. Now that's more reasonable. That's the, you know, kind of the Steelers structure. So if you said 5, 7, it's closer to reasonable. Maybe that's a reasonable number, and it would have reduced the total number of players. It might have also made it more difficult to keep a player like Van Noy or like Henry. That was, you know, on the margin of a mid-range contract.
And we don't see the cap the same way, though. You are the cap is real guy. I am the cap is not real guy. For okay, something you, that all goes up $20 million every future year, finding $7 million against your cap is nothing.
Okay,
you can always pay it against the next year.
As long as you're not 7, 14, 28, 35. Doing that, that's, or it really, it'd be a lot worse than that. It'd be more like the way that a lot of people want it. It's more like 20, 40, 60, 80. They want to borrow against the cap going forward. And that's where I can't do it. As a season ticket holder, I'm out on that kind of bullshit. I want levelized play. And you're on Voss's side, though. I'll tell you that. Voss thinks much like you do about not being too worried about a reset year. I'm very worried about a reset year. I don't want any part of it.
I mean, when the year Lamar gets hurt and doesn't play a majority of games for the Ravens, and the year that Lamar leaves or retires from the Ravens will be a hard reset, no matter how much the Ravens, they could spend a lot or they could spend nothing, and they will suck that year no matter what.
Okay, so the first one, I can live with it because no one could have foreseen it. It sucks, but I can live with it. And by the way, you're not getting out of a lot of cap responsibility with that kind of year, because you can't reset other components of your cap during the year. So, but the when Lamar is done being a hard reset, completely agree with you. I think there's a, you know, a year like that will come. It'll be the cost of having Lamar Jackson. But I'd look at that as being, you know, year 15 or something. I'd want that to be, or year 13 maybe of Lamar's career. We're
so what six, if I posit? What if I put it to you this way though, Ken? What if an additional over the vet minimum, let's say 5.5 or 6 million, let's even call it $8 million against the cap, was the difference between the Ravens losing the first two games of the year and losing against Oakland at home, right? Ridiculously. So that was the reason why they didn't have a home game against Buffalo, which is why they had to play in the cold and why Mark Andrews dropped the ball, because he can't play in the cold, apparently.
Okay. Well, I mean, you're
Mark Andrews couldn't hold on to the ball in Buffalo. He couldn't. I mean, Mark Andrews could not hold on to the ball in Buffalo. There's
all right.
Tell me a time he held on to the ball, because I can think of two that he didn't.
All right. So if the Ravens win game week two against the Raiders, if that's the difference in your additional spending, which I think is maybe a reasonable thing to talk about, you're not going to give them the win in week one. I mean, I don't think that you know, the difference in $5 million in spending is going to give them that win. And it's not fair to assume.
But you just said that in week one, they had all kinds of problems with picks and rubs.
And Queen is not going to fix that.
And they lost by a point.
But Queen is not going to fix that. Queen is not going to fix pick and rub.
His awareness and knowledge of the defense is, I would take that over Trent Simpson's in a heartbeat. I think to say that it would have little to no impact is silly.
All right, we're not going to resolve this here, and we need to get through the inside linebacker show, so we'll leave it at that. But if you can guarantee me a win, then I'm going to always look at that and decide whether or not the thing is a reasonable amount of money to pay for an additional win. So I'm perfectly capable of doing that. But the problem is you can't put that piece together, and no one else can, and no one else is even particularly good at doing it, honestly. So that's where I have a real problem with it in terms of what does it take to get one additional win. It's an interesting study to be done, by the way, but I have a hard time. Let's keep going and talk about Roquan Smith here, because I thought still a well-deserved all-pro nod for Roquan this year. Didn't quite have the year that he did last year. He's still a better player than he was for his time in Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, you get exactly what you expect out of Roquan Smith. And the only knock that I felt like I had on him was that he was a little bit less of like an absolute run stuffer this year. That there were a few plays where you would expected him to be in the hole and to be stopping a run play, and he was either getting blocked and not shed or wasn't getting there, especially early in the season. It felt like it got cleaned up much later in the season. That would be my only very slight knock, that maybe two or three times it was kind of like, how did that happen? Those are not plays that are typically happening against the Ravens defense and in particular Roquan Smith.
87.6% of the snaps this year, sat out week 12 against the Chargers. What was really great about his season was the low missed tackle rate and the great stop to missed tackle rate, which is 53-11 for the year, 4.8. It was better even than his 2023 year. Hear the dog going clickety clack over there. Mine's actually being quiet here. This is amazing. This just doesn't typically happen, I got to say. But the knock on Roquan's play this year was yards per target in the passing game. And I do think I cut Roquan some slack this year, because I think, one, the safety play behind him was quite poor. So he suffers from some of the same things that any of the weak side linebacker guys do. But also he's playing next to a guy who they have to try and protect by having Roquan have more of the direct pass responsibilities. So the combination anyway of poor safety play and a not great pass defender playing next to him, I think, hurt Roquan's overall yards per target and what coverage responsibilities he had to take that were suboptimal for him.
Well, that's what happened when Hamilton.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Fall in love with low prices, all in the Kroger app. Get juicy green, red, or black seedless grapes for $1.88 a pound with your card and a digital coupon. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And Washington started playing safety better, is that they were playing a lot more back to front in terms of what you were getting out of your pass defense. So Roquan knew what was happening behind him to a better degree, and he did not have to worry about dropping too deep in some of those. It felt like Roquan was so deep on some of his drops early in the year. And, you know, you don't think much of that. You're like, kind of like, oh man, why would they call that? Right. But what you realize ultimately is that he is just like shading a step or two to protect the safeties. And when you live in a world where of the NFL, where things happen really quickly and everybody's really good, one or two steps makes a big difference.
That's a great point. And by the way, Roquan only gave up 80 yards passing on 15 targets from week 11 on, when the Ravens pass defense was great. So that's 5 1/3 yards per target. That's fantastic. So the improvement was there, and he was part of it. I suspect it's not a lot of that was really due to Roquan personally improving. I think most of it was probably the players around him were a little bit better fit, whether that was board on some of those third downs, but definitely the safeties.
I just got, and maybe this was just like feeding into like how bad the defense was in the first half of the year compared to the second half. Mm-hmm. He did seem quicker in the second half of the year than he did in the first half. And that might be, it could also be him having to process and do more things because he was concerned about other things that were going on around him. And maybe that was part of it. They moved the green dot from Roquan to Hamilton too, right?
Oh, no. Roquan's
no, okay. Why did I think that?
Hamilton might have had it in week 12 when Roquan was out. Maybe.
Okay, maybe that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah. I don't think Washington.
There was a lot of chatter about how. Yeah.
We talked about his limited role as a pass rusher. I don't think we need to do that. Still the unquestioned leader of the defense. I think, you know, what he does for the team on the field is good. You know, we still see him doing things. If you look at all 22, you'll see Roquan. One of the things he does is look to the other side of the field to see what responsibility is coming into his area. That's good. You want that. You don't want a guy who's like leached on to what his primary responsibility is going to be. If only to like what you're giving away to the opposing quarterback in terms of man coverage. A guy who looks to the other side is telling it, yeah, it might be zone. I'm not telling you, but it might be zone because I'm looking over here. And then if he can key back on his guy. But if you're Patrick Queen and your eyes are, you know, bulging up like an insect and you're looking at the running back you're supposed to be covering, then that's probably not a good thing in terms of what you're giving away.
Well, and I always thought that, you know, Tyus Bowser is a good example of a player that really evolved on that. That early in his career, he was a guy that played in the zone area that he was supposed to be in. He was always in the right area, but sometimes that was not to his advantage. And really, over the course of his third and fourth year, he started to get a feel for what offenses were trying to do, how that fit in terms of what he was trying to do in the defense. And he really became a much better defender against the pass in space. And so to me, that speaks to opportunity for Simpson to be able to take that step forward. But Roquan being a really good example of how you can really elevate your game in a few subtle ways on pass defense and not just your performance.
Okay. All right. Let's move on. Talk a little bit about Trenton Simpson. Definitely turbulent first year. A lot of our talk has already been about him so far. Is his spot up in the air for year three, or do you expect the Ravens to go with him? Do you even have a possibility that the Ravens, you know, draft a guy? I don't think it would be particularly high, but potentially to replace him.
The Ravens just, I'll start with the last thing that you said first. I don't see the Ravens starting an inside linebacker that they draft unless it's like genuine pedigree and they really like the guy and they're ready to like hand him that spot, which I don't think that's what they're going to do with a pick in any of those positions. So that seems a little less likely to me. It feels like Simpson has to be at least given some kind of advantage here in camp, right? Like this is, we get to the end of the year and we say, okay, Trenton, I don't know what he goes by. These are the things that we need you to work on in the offseason. We need you this is the film that you need to go and watch and understand these concepts. These are the areas where we need to see growth from these specific things that they were coming from you. And they weren't missed tackles. We don't need you to get faster. We don't need you to get stronger. We don't need, you know, with Malik Harrison, it was kind of like, we want you to be faster, right? We want you to be quicker twitch. Those things aren't going to happen. Mm-hmm. You can send him home with homework. And if he comes back and he's done that homework and he's prepared for what he needs to do, I mean, I think that you at least have to give him the first crack at seeing whether or not that's a job that he's going to be able to handle.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there is enough evidence to know that the correct spot for Harrison is probably as an outside linebacker at this point, not on the inside. He's just, he reshaped his body, which was really part of the issue. But to continue on with Simpson, gave up 9.3 yards per target. That isn't acceptable. He did have a solid 22-6 ratio of stops to missed tackles. So that's 3.67-1. You like him for that, certainly. So he contributed enough to run defense, even though the tackle number is not an enormous tackle number. He contributed enough in terms of his ratio to provide value there. It's just that 9.3 yards per target. You really can't accept that from any position on the field. Inside linebackers happen to give up a very high percentage completion rate that goes with that. Oftentimes when you get a number that high, there'll be some missed tackles involved. That really wasn't the problem for Simpson, but he did have a bad year in terms of yards per target.
Yeah, you know, and he did play really well on the edge. He's just, you know, he's a little overmatched inside linebacker. We've always known this. Patrick Mahomes is a good example of that. He figured that out in in 2020 or 2019, whatever year that was. And I think they targeted him like 7 times in one game and all of them were big time catches. And they just kept going back to it. And it was the same kind of route every time that they were attacking him. They were isolating him and attacking him. He's a sure tackler in the right situations, in the right space. He seems to really have a good sense of what run fits need to be look like. He sets the edge exceptionally well when he's on the outside. I think because of that, he's got a role here on this team, right? And the flexibility to be able to step inside when you need someone to take a few snaps like that, give him that ultimate versatility as a player.
Okay, so you're talking about Harrison, just to be clear, and not Simpson here, right?
No
problem. It's all valid what you said. It just took me a moment to decode that because you're saying some things about Simpson playing the edge that I didn't quite get it, but I think I got it now. Is there anything more we need to say about Simpson before we move on? Tyler Santucci, that hire, I do expect to help Simpson. I think that's it's a key relationship for both people and for Santucci to excel with as a coach. And I can't help but think back to Rob Ryan being brought in to coach Queen and the bullshit I saw go on at camp between Ryan and Queen. It's just, they clearly did not relate to each other. It's not hard to see why this, you know, guy who's, you know, 40 years his senior plus is not going to relate to Patrick Queen, but it was bad. I think there's a better chance for Santucci being a younger coach. And he's certainly, I don't think we've talked since this, but Santucci, I really like as a dynasty hire. He should be part of the succession plan going forward.
Yeah, I mean, he would be a lot of buzz and really good from like a college overall perspective. I thought it was a great signing for the Ravens as well. And they do a really good job of pulling those college coaches out. So hopefully, you know, if he could come in and really work with Trenton Simpson and turn him around, we'd be talking about a really, that could be a really significant value boost for this Ravens defense.
Yeah, big value boost and a huge star on his resume. You know, it's one of the, it'll be bolded on his resume across this fix Trenton Simpson kind of thing. You'd really want that.
So if the Ravens could bring back Patrick Queen on a vet minimum next year instead, would you prefer they stick with Simpson? I think I know your answer to this.
Would I prefer they stick with Simpson? Because Simpson is he's somewhat over the vet minimum, but they can't get rid of him. So if you're talking about, would I want him additionally on the team? Or what? Okay. First of all, would I want him on the team ahead of a player like Board? Probably. Board gives you a lot more special teams value, and he's a special teams captain. You'd be discarding if you did that. I still probably rather have Queen. And the question is, would I have Queen playing over Simpson? I think the answer is still probably yes. And I'd still be hoping that Tyler Santucci could be fixing what is fundamentally wrong with Queen, and not just allowing Queen to play up to his highest potential ceiling that he could do playing next to Roquan.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. Queen, the one thing I do think that Queen brings is the blitzing ability. And Simpson did some of this, you know, a little, we saw a little bit from time to time. But like you mentioned, with Roquan not blitzing from the inside, the Ravens did really feel like they were missing elite inside linebacker rushing that they got a lot of from Queen. That was the one area that I think they really missed him.
Yeah, he did some good things in terms of pick setting too, being the under guy on some twists that were good. So there definitely were things that Patrick Queen, I'm not going to minimize what Patrick Queen brought to the defense. I mean, he definitely did bring some things to the defense. He's just overall, he's not the kind of player you give a cornerstone contract to. It's a huge mistake. It's both a mistake in terms of the position, which was what Voss would be on, but it's a mistake in terms of the quality of the player, which is what I would get on. All right, let's talk a little bit more about Malik, because he did some good things. He played 32% of the regular season snaps on defense in total. About 60% of those were at inside linebacker. Now, I included him in some outside linebacker discussions. He really played better there, but it was not what he ended up primarily doing for the year. They ended up relying on him as a two-down thumper. It's something I thought he could do for this Ravens team when he was drafted, but then he weighed about 240 or 242, and now he weighs 259, or that's where he lists at for the Ravens. And he's just too big to play inside linebacker properly and handle all the responsibilities that go with that position.
Yeah. Welcome to the 2025-ish era of the NFL, right? You know, I think that if he would have been around 7 years ago, he would have, or let's say 10 years ago, he would have had 4 or 5 good years playing weak side linebacker for the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, that could be true. He would have. I'm trying to think of who the player. Jameel McClain might be the guy who was most like him in terms of Ravens history. A guy who was clearly a two down thumper. You got him out of there on later downs. You didn't want him in there defending the pass. Harrison this last year allowed 14.5 yards per target in coverage. That was the striking number that kind of defines his season in a lot of ways. And he gave up the 70-yard touchdown to. I think it was Jamar Chase was on the right side. It was a short pass and then a long run after it. But there was some question about whether he was really responsible for that. But even if you want to say that wasn't his responsibility to be there, it's still over 10.0 yards per target without that. So I can't turn lemons into lemonade by somehow saying, well, that wasn't his responsibility. And then it's only 10 and it's no big deal. Kind of. Well, no, it's still a big deal. It's a really bad one. He also had 20 stops to 12 missed tackles, which is a 1.67-1 stop to missed tackle rate. That includes time at outside linebacker, where presumably he would have had a lot better tackling probability, because outside linebackers are typically better than inside linebackers. And to give you an idea of my disdain for that number, at 1.67-1, Patrick Queen was 1.8-1 this year, and he was terrible. I mean, 1.8-1 is terrible. So thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm when you had made the comment earlier about the yards per target about Simpson, that's why my brain had gone to Harrison, because I have like a one-track mind when it comes to Malik Harrison and his inability to stop the pass, and how every team in the league will try and target him when he's on the field via the pass because he can't defend it, right? And he's a step too slow. And like, even if you want to say that And I don't think that he defended the Cordell Patterson and touchdown in that Steelers game particularly well when he scored it. He had complete lack of awareness of where the like, he pulled a Brandon Stevens. He just kind of had no idea where the ball was. He was just kind of chasing the guy. Mm-hmm. And when you're chasing a guy that's taller and faster than you and you're not even looking around for the ball, then he's probably going to catch it. Yeah. Because that's how it works in the NFL. So, you know, to me, I'm just kind of like a one-track mind with Malik Harrison, which is like, let him set the edge, let him do those things well. Don't let him drop back in pass protection, like isolate his packages in terms of what you have. Let him be a guy that can do some of those other things if you need it because of injuries and depth. But if, you know, I was never even comfortable. I was looking for where he was on the field to find out where other teams were going to throw the ball in the second half when they were using him at inside linebacker sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, that's, it is scary. Obviously, even when he's out there on first or second down, when that's a problem. Now they did, when they had a base package in, they typically used them on the edge anyway, and they had board in there on early downs, and then you're giving up something against the run also, so you're probably concerned about it either way. But the Ravens have a couple options here, and I was going to ask you about what you specifically just responded with, but I'm going to move on to a different topic now. The Ravens, in terms of salary they can pay him, they just finished paying him a qualified vet contract. Now, to get a qualified vet contract, you need to be playing with the team for four consecutive years. So he qualified for that. Board, for instance, does not qualify it for it. And the big guy coming up this year who qualifies it for it is Tylan Wallace. So I think he'd be an excellent use of it if they can keep him for that money. Is there any part of you that says he doesn't meet our needs enough on special teams and as an early down edge that we can afford to make a roster spot for him and pay him the vet minimum? Is there any part of you that doesn't want to do that?
I would lose, not that I lose a lot of sleep about the 53rd or the 49th, whatever you want to call it, like the down end roster spots for the Ravens. I would lose no sleep over Malik Harrison not being on this roster.
Okay. So,
and special teams play has been so diminished now by the way, particularly the Ravens like to kick the ball out of the end zone. That is just like the gunners are more important out of your punt game, but the Ravens have really taken the kick return, the defending kick returns part out of the game for them.
Yeah. Themselves. I don't disagree with that at all. He's a five unit special teams player. Because he also plays on the kick block unit, I believe. Maybe am I mistaking him with somebody? Maybe it's Board who does that. But anyway, I think he's a five-unit player. He does give you a lot of versatility. He's very much like Albert McClellan. But I think after the season he just had, I think my answer to it would be to take away that qualified vetmin contract and just give him a vetmin contract. And I think the two guys that I would offer the qualified vetmin contract to, if it can be done, the first is Wallace, and he may get a better deal otherwise. The second one is Patrick Ricard, because I think that might be just about the right price to get him back. And you could get him for 1 year at that price and a serial number of years. You have two of those contracts you can give out.
Yeah, I would be surprised if they got both of those guys at that price level. I think Tylan Wallace has a little bit more value in the free agency market just because wide receivers have value. Mm-hmm. In particular, and he's had some big plays in his career and in big moments too. And I feel like the Ravens are just going to pay Ricard more than that because they like him.
The one team that I see being the big problem at taking either of those players is the Chargers. They just have too much familiarity with the Ravens personnel and scheme. And Wallace is a really great run blocker. So you'd lose that. So there will be some potentially bidding over those players. I think the advantage they have with Ricard, and I mentioned this on a number of other shows, I apologize for repeating the content, but I did want to say it once to you, is that Ricard's endorsement empire here in Baltimore could be getting bigger. if Tucker is no longer the spokesman for Royal Farms, Ricard makes an excellent choice. And he could very easily have a much bigger role there. And I think it's got to be less significant how many dollars he earns from the Ravens. Whereas if he goes out to LA, he's stepping into new turf, and maybe, you know, I'm sure there are endorsements out there he can get too, but I think it'd be, it's not as clear cut that he's the obvious guy for it.
Yeah. There are not a lot of endorsements living in LA. I can tell you that there are not nearly as many endorsements from Chargers players as you might expect in LA too. So you have that market problem. The one other thing I'd add to this is the Ravens have a lot of draft picks coming up this year. in particular, with the four comp picks that are projected to come in, if all of those come in, and I, at this point, it seems like those are pretty close to a sure thing. If that is the case, then that puts Malik Harrison's potential roster spot at a lot more risk. The Ravens, for a team, you know, it's interesting because the Ravens have always been a team that's been really good at finding undrafted inside linebackers and undrafted defensive tackles. That's kind of been the history of the Ravens and undrafted guys in general, but those two spots in particular. It feels like we have not seen a great one on either of those in a minute. And so, you know, you'd have John Ross seemed like he might have a chance of being that inside linebacker guy and then kind of fell off the face. Zach Seiler was the defensive tackle guy that they let get away.
Well, he was a seven. He wasn't complete. He was an undrafted, but yes, I agree.
Okay, fair. Right, right. He was the last pick of Ozzy?
Last pick of Ozzy, yeah. And great player. My God, he won the Miami Dolphins team MVP this year. Just incredible.
Right. So it's interesting that they've let that kind of slip away. I wonder whether or not some of those down-end roster spots, though, are going to end up going to some of these draft pick spots, particularly when you're looking at it from like a special teams perspective or something like that.
Yeah, they do have to figure that out, and they've got additional players and difficulty not only making the 53, but difficulty making the game day roster that they're going to have to look at. You can only have so many developmental guys in that group, and frankly, the Ravens this year were incredibly lucky that they never had walking wounded at any time during the year. And look back to these previous 3 or 4 years of Ravens teams, they were threatening it at some point during the season just about every year, where they had almost not 47 or 48 healthy guys to play of their 53. Even when the two extra potential elevations were considered. So it's tougher. And if they're going to have some players who are just developmental, that gives you a lot more difficulty putting your team together properly at that point. So, all right, let's talk Chris Board a little bit. 167 snaps inside linebacker. All but four of those came from week 11 on. So right there, with the week 11 being the light switch turning on for this defense in terms of its how they defended the pass, but in terms of how they didn't allow points and all that, it's really nice to have that kind of a breakdown of snaps for Chris Board.
Yeah, it's what the right spot and the right time. I think that it's the same analysis inverted here as it was about Simpson, which is that they weren't bad just because of Simpson, and they weren't better just because of Board. But golly, if you guaranteed your roster spot because you were there at the right place at the right time and you get to make an extra $1.5 million, good for you.
Hopefully they will re-sign Board. I think he's a player that's probably worth keeping. They've just given him a C patch in terms of the making him captain of the special teams. He's one of six they handed out. But he really has more of the old Danelle Ellerbe role. And when Ellerbe first came into the league and was playing along with McClain would play on most first downs. A second and medium to long down was an Ellerbe down. And then they had a dime back on third down. So that was a really, you know, complex platoon that they had for a while. I got no problem with that continuing. I got no problem giving a spot to Board if his only role was, say, to be in on between second and seven and second and 10. And then you move to the dime on third down. I got no problem at all with that.
Yeah, I'm choosing Board over Harrison, certainly, in the other iteration, which the Ravens did the opposite of this past year, right? Or was Harrison already under contract?
Harrison signed a 1-year deal this year for the special, where he makes another million. It doesn't count against the cap, and that's what I'm hoping they can reallocate that money to Wallace and Ricard, and other teams aren't willing to match it.
I couldn't remember. So you know, given the choice between the two, Board over Harrison seems to make a lot more sense. Obviously, you have he gives you the special teams veteran status. And then Braid and Kane play a factor in that roster spot also potentially evaporating too, that if you're going to get what you need from either of them on special teams out of that spot too, and the Ravens are committed for draft pick reasons to those guys. Well, I guess Braid wasn't a draft pick, but
they're not committed.
But if they feel committed in any way.
Yeah. The only value of the commitment they would have would be something to Kane, where they could have him for a cheaper fourth year because they signed him to a 4-year deal. But now the NFL has all those rules about if you make certain minimums or thresholds that they pay you extra anyway. So it's actually pretty minimal. Yeah.
And it didn't affect the merry-go-round that was Geno Stone's status on the Ravens.
No, it did not affect that. And it didn't affect the absolute vacuum of available safeties late in the year. They didn't trust either of those guys on the back end, which should tell you enough about whether or not they really want them in the game on those kind of plays. I my guess would be probably Brady does not make the team this next year, that Kane probably will, because I think he's a better special teams player, and that they will hope, but it's probably like about as likely as betting on an 11 here, that he'll all of a sudden the switch will go on. It's not that unlikely, but that all of a sudden the switch will go on and he'll become a decent player who can play on the back end. All right. Well, Board only had one missed tackle in 20 total tackle attempts, 5% missed tackle rate, which is great. 4-1 missed stops to missed tackle, which is good on a extremely small scale. And the 7.0 yards per target he allowed were good. You don't see him, I don't think, with particularly good PFF grades. I've got to go back and look and see if that's true. But I look at those other metrics for. Okay, so what did Chris grade? Is Chris Board did? No, actually, he's got quite good PFF grades this year in 167 snaps. So no issue from that perspective. Anyway, I do think he'll be back in any case. I don't think he's a risk to not be here. And if they. They can't give him the special contract. They can't give him the extra million of free cap money, but they can give him a 2-year contract with a small premium to the vet minimum. And hopefully that'd be enough to bring him back. He's captain here. He'll be potentially a long-term player. If he plays 3 more years here, he'd be back eligible to be a qualified veteran contract, which probably is too far out to matter.
Yeah, I agree, but I think he's almost a lock to see him back, unless there's some other iteration of something happens with the Ravens. And the Ravens feel like they have a pretty stable roster heading into next year overall. I think they have a couple really big decisions to make, but generally speaking, this is a pretty stable roster. And with all the draft picks coming in, there's not a lot of flexibility in this roster. So you know, as much as we might want to say we think he's nearly a lock in that sense, a lot of things can happen for a very few number of roster spots here.
That's right. And always a year 5 vet min player, as valuable as Board could potentially be to you in a few different ways, doesn't carry the kind of gravitas that a first year 4th round draft pick at inside linebacker would if they went that far to draft somebody. I think we'll agree. Christian Welch, no factor in 25 decision making.
No. Was he a factor in 24 decision making?
I'm trying to hold back my, you know, smirkiness at that question, and you're just open about it. That's good.
There was a point where I think I said on a podcast with you, Ken, that the Ravens should have given him a look at inside linebacker because it was just such a turnstile for them defensively against the pass. So it's just funny in the sense was he active?
Yeah, he was active. I think he might not have started a game, but he played like a snap early in one of these really weird multiple rotation things. I think I'll tell you what it was. I think he played at weak side linebacker on an early game snap when the Ravens were in base defense. They hadn't yet committed that Board was going to be their guy in those situations. And I'd have to go back and see exactly what week it was, but that was the how he got in method. He had a few snaps, so I want to say. I'm going to say he had 12 snaps for the year, if I had to guess. Let's just look.
I'd definitely be taking the under.
You're taking the under? You're probably right. Let me just go check this out.
I didn't even think he was active, so of course I'm taking the under.
Okay. 17 with the Ravens. Nine against the Chargers. Yeah, I forgot about the game where Roquan is out. One against the Giants, 6 against against Houston, and 1 against Cleveland. All right. All right, let's look ahead to 2025 in the non-Christian Welch, you know, variety. Draft pick at inside linebacker be one of the 11. Would you be surprised if they didn't take someone?
I'd be surprised if they didn't take someone.
Okay. I'd be a little surprised too. They may have a UDFA they just love. Remember the Bart Scott time when they basically said you can't say Bart Scott's name in the building anywhere? They're getting him. That was great. Harrison does become kind of a player who is very much on the button, and not necessarily because of on the bubble, not because of what's going on at inside linebacker as much as what's going on at outside linebacker, where both positions really have a ton of potential for developmental players and the need to plug holes with veteran players as well. So you maybe, if you're going to go cheap and get another pass rusher, which the Ravens very well may do to get a third pass rusher to go with Van Noy and Owe, then they're somebody's losing their roster spot. I think it's probably Ajabo is the first guy to go. I don't know how you feel about that, but it could be Harrison. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I think Harrison might go before Ajabo. I mean, Ajabo is one of the ones where you feel like, I mean, they have what they saw on tape when they drafted him. They obviously knew about the injury and kind of like the chance that they were taking with him. And like, it's like the one, it's like clinging to like Ajabo's potential is like different than clinging to like Kane or Braid's potential, right? And then where you have a guy that was being talked about as a potential top 15 pick before he got hurt, and having the upside of that, if he was a top 15 pick, then they would ride their contract out for sure. He has that kind of on his side.
Okay. Let me just say this. The Ravens certainly thought they had a floor with Ajabo in terms of what he did. Remember, he's one of many players, Owe being another one, where they talked about the run defense contributions that he made were going to be at a minimum. They're going to get that out of him. Ajabo's never done jack against the run during his entire career. So if he came in with a floor that should have been a little bit low because he's coming off an injury and a pretty serious one, and a really high ceiling possibility, I would say there's been some Star Wars trash compactorizing of that floor and ceiling to make them come much closer together, even though the floor has dropped. So the floor is basically they get virtually nothing, or they get, you know, what they've gotten through 3 years out of Ajabo and basically nothing in year four. He moves on somewhere, maybe plays a year in the NFL, maybe spends 2 years on practice squads and he's out of the league. And then the ceiling has got to be way down in terms of what you could possibly get on Ajabo at the up end, or at least if you're looking at the 90th percentile of what you might get out of Ajabo, or 95th percentile, it's much lower than it was when it came out of school. So the Ravens, as much as they might want to cling for hope, they better get out of that trash compactor before it completely closes on them, because it'll cost them a roster spot and cost them a chance to sign a veteran that could really help the team. And that would bother me. That would bother me a lot.
It's certainly a good application of the sunk cost fallacy for anybody that doesn't understand the concept of that. It's a good one to not give him value because of what you might have lost in terms of that potential that you talked about.
Yeah.
I think the other reason why there's opportunity is because it's health related, right? And so like you look at a guy like Ronnie Stanley, who very clearly was not healthy over the last couple of years after his injury. And once he got over the hump of that health, you saw a really big improvement. I don't think that people thought Ronnie Stanley was going to get back to where he was this past year. I'm glad that he did. It was a coin flip for me. If he wouldn't have gotten back to that level, I wouldn't have been surprised either. And so you look at something like that and you look at, well, how many times are we going to have an opportunity that with a guy with health who has some of like the pass rush kind of like instincts that Ajabo has shown, he just doesn't seem to have the physical juice anymore to like get it done. If we can get the physical juice back, is that worth the risk of what that looks like? I feel like that's more how they're looking at it than I certainly think that if you look at what you've seen on the field from him, there's nothing to say that he deserves a roster spot next year.
right. Okay. In terms of inside linebackers, certainly could find a UDFA two down player. And we'll see about the development in Simpson. I think the Simpson Santucci, time we'll see together is critically important to the team. Do you have any sense that the Ravens might try and take Simpson off special teams to try and get him focused more on playing inside linebacker, make use of that practice time better? Or do you think, boy, they could whittle his value down to zero if they took him out of special teams as well?
I don't think they will because they didn't give him a chance to do one thing, like one package well in terms of like his opportunity. When they went and made him split series with Board, it's a whole lot with how the Ravens felt about what Trenton Simpson, they felt he could handle. And like that felt like the opportunity is like, yeah, put him in on first downs, right? Like that's probably the best time to have Trenton Simpson in these games or, you know, third and short packages, right? Like that, I feel like those would have been good moments to have him around, right? And so, but they didn't feel like there was any package that was appropriate for a guy that was could have been included in those iterations to be able to do that. And that said a lot. So I don't think they'll take that away from him because I don't think that they think that was the issue.
Okay. All right, I think I agree with that as well. I think that he'll be in there on both, and it does not seem like a good plan to try and make him a one package guy to start with as a third year player. But it might have to be the backup, the fallback route they take. I don't have any problem if he's a two down player. I just don't want to have multiple weak side linebacker substitutions occurring, which minimize Simpson to a role that we can't even see who he is. And he's just really a special teams player at that point. I think that would be, it would be unfortunate.
And year three is the make or break year for that kind of position. You know, I think that, sure, that some of these positions, it's a lot, you know, it's easier to come in and thrive earlier than others. And I think inside linebacker is one of those ones where you really, like, it's a very mental position, right? Obviously, from a physicality perspective, you got to have it because you're like, that's what makes it such a tough position. If you don't have it physically, like look at Malik Harrison, it doesn't matter how well you can process, you're just not going to be able to make up for it in today's NFL. And so, you know, there's so much that teams are throwing at you that by year three, you've either caught up and you've got to figure it out at least enough to be serviceable or you don't. So I think we'll find out pretty fast about Simpson once we get to the regular season. That's the other problem. Another one of these guys look great in the preseason because it's such a dumbed down version of the game in those moments that we're not going to know until a few weeks into the season what we have.
Yeah, well, that's true. That certainly was true of Josh Ross, for example, in terms of how he looked. All right, it's always a pleasure talking football with you, Jordan. A great discussion here about the inside linebackers. And, you know, it's a group that's pretty stable in one sense. You got one player, we can talk about for about 5 minutes, and then you got another bunch of players where you don't really know who you have. But it's always a lot of fun to talk that. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Yeah, I've been using Twitter less, but you can find me there at RavensSitRoom. I'm exploring Reddit and some other opportunities. So I'm a free agent from a.
What's your Reddit handle?
It's Flash Jordan K. It's FL Flash Jordan without the A K. It's okay. Like all old gamer tag. So I probably need to come up with something a little bit more serviceable before I start sharing that.
All right, fair enough. Other folks out there, if you've got an idea for a film study short, hit me up. I've got a lot of great ideas for those coming up. Someone wants to do one about win probability in game. Got another 3-part series that's just about to come out on some cap planning and in terms specifically of re-signing some of the players a year early in order to gain some cap relief in 2025 that I think is really good. That'll be coming up probably a couple of days after you hear this. So maybe even before, so you can look back for it too, as well as forward. But Jordan, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.